This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 320, where CJ and AC are going to discuss AC's recent blog post on his SharePoint Framework 2019 summer wish list, recorded live September the 12th, 2019.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
So it feels a little meta when you're talking about yourself in the third and first person when you're talking, when you're doing an intro to the podcast.
Yo, Doug, I'm going to take some AC and put some AC on your AC.
If you got any questions, submit them to AC. Yeah. How's it going, dude?
A little better than last week.
Feeling a little more tip-top?
A little, yeah. I haven't actually listened to last week's show, but I just think back to recording it and feeling really shady at the time. So I apologize. But I'm back in Seattle, and I've had a good sleep. and I'm feeling a little bit better.
There were multiple times I was tempted to take a screenshot and post it on Twitter, but I thought that would be kind of mean because you look like you had eaten some bad seafood when we were recording that.
I was feeling really quite shady. Yeah, it wasn't good. But yes, I'm back in the saddle. How about you?
I'm good. So I did something a little risky last night. I've been on the beta for iOS and iPad OS now for about a month or so, and it's been pretty stable, but I just upgraded my MacBook to the beta of Catalina. Once I saw that from the Apple event this week when Apple said it's coming GA in October, and I was like, you know what? I don't have to present or travel until November, so I'm okay being on beta right now and, you know, having to pay my machine and rebuild it if stuff doesn't go well. So what the hell?
When you said I thought I'd done something a little risky, I was like, oh man, are you wearing heels again?
Again. Well, okay, so the other risky thing, not by me, but actually by my wife, speaking of heels, I sent her off on a girls' weekend this week. Oh, I shouldn't say I sent her off. She kind of told me I was going off on a girls' weekend. So I was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
They're on their way to Port Canaveral right now, and they're going to get on a cruise ship that's going to the Bahamas. The island they're going to wasn't affected by the hurricane, but at least the last one, they are on their way, and there is another about 60% or greater than a 60% chance that their, it's called Invest 95, is going to be Hurricane Umberto in the next 3 to 4 days, and she's going to be gone for...
3 to 4 days.
About 4 days. So... But 4 to 5 days. And yes, they leave today. They get back on Monday. And the hurricane is tracking the same initial track that Hurricane Dorian did, which is, this morning I asked her, I was like, so have you been watching the tropics? And she's like, yes. I'm like, okay, I wasn't going to mention this last night because I wanted you to at least get some sleep. Because I figured you'd be up late with the girls. But your boat's kind of going right in the path of a tropical storm / hurricane. And she's like, is this something we should be worried about? I'm like, I really don't think that Norwegian is going to send a boat into a hurricane. So I think you're fine. You may get some rain and it may be a little choppy, but
I think
you'll be fine.
There's people that would say, nope.
Well, on the other side of me is thinking, she's not listening to this, thankfully. And so if any of my friends are listening to this, don't say this on Facebook, please. But it might get her to stop going on a girls' weekend, leaving me solo for the weekend.
I don't know, man. That can pay dividends in the long term. I think when Vicky goes away for girls' weekends, it is mental therapy for her and she loves it.
Yeah, it's good for her. It's this weekend's a little stressful because we got two kids, two swim meets this weekend. One is a high school swim meet tonight on Thursday night and then another one this weekend. So I got my hands full. Yeah, so. Hey, I saw a bit of news this week. This isn't really related to what we do on the show, but I thought it'd be kind of cool just to mention it. So you know the company Stripe?
Oh, yeah.
They do like the payment processing, credit card processing for a lot of a lot of online businesses. And most of you listening to the show have at least one service that uses Stripe. Like if you are a Plex customer, right? They, you know, I think that they use Stripe. It's what I use for doing payment processing for my business, at least the primary sources. And they just make stuff so easy. Well, in the last 2 weeks, they've announced two things. One is Stripe Capital. So they actually have a capital program where you can take out like small business loans and pay them back based on your sales and your balance that you have in your Stripe account with favorable rates without having to go to a bank and deal with that stuff. So if you need to be, if you have like cash flow issues or if the way your business runs, it just has a cash flow kind of challenge to it. It's cool to have a nice offering from Stripe. But the one that I wanted to mention is they've issued a corporate card. Now there's a couple of things that are cool about this, but the reason I wanted to bring it up, I'll come to that in just a minute. So it's neat because, I mean, first of all, it's Stripe. So if you're thinking like small business, you know, screw the man, not doing the big Visa, MasterCard thing.
Yeah.
But they, and I'm sure they go through one of those systems, either Visa, MasterCard, or American Express. But your card can be branded for your company, so it can be unique to you. The rates on it are favorable. Like the setup and everything is very favorable, very, very nice for small business. But the thing that I liked about it is they have some benefits that are really targeted to small business, like Amazon Web Services, $5,000 credit in Amazon Web Services. There's credits for Google Drive and Google Apps and Gmail and a whole bunch of other services.
And Intercom, HubSpot.
Yeah, it's stuff that is very popular on small business. And I'm looking at this, and this is the reason I wanted to call it out. I was like, man, Microsoft, this would have been a great opportunity to give away $5,000 in Azure credits or X number of credits towards Office 365 E3 licenses. I mean, this would be a great thing to go after small businesses. So I hope that somebody from Microsoft saw this and was like, oh man, we should get in on that too. And not just, because it still feels like, you and I have talked about it, but still feels like Microsoft just, I know this isn't a very fair thing to say, but AWS sure does feel like the small business startup play. And Azure doesn't really seem to care about it, or at least they don't do much to care about it.
Microsoft, I'm going to be rough on them for a second, but Microsoft has never, ever really properly understood SMB, like small and medium business in general, regardless of the tech startup side of things, right? Because they've always been a through partner company in that regard, right? Microsoft didn't for the longest time have direct relationships with small businesses. That would all be through partner companies and, you know, whoever you bought your fax machine and your printer paper and stuff from would do your IT support. That was your partner who would do the Windows stuff and the PC stuff and the Office stuff for you. So Microsoft has never built proper SMB muscle. And so they just don't, it still ripples through their behavior to date.
Yeah, and you even see things like the BizSpark program that they had for a while, that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, that's gone. I'm not asking for Microsoft to have like a huge like program and staffing and all that stuff that really pushes the small business and or the micro business, the really small stuff. Mm. But at least having an option to where, you know, similar like what they have with like the Hacker News stuff that went on or the Y Combinator things that give them a reason to at least have something that sits next to what an AWS is going to have for an offer. Or what a Google Apps does. Because I think that, you know, when I sit down with some other small businesses and they're on the Google platform and they're on AWS, I'm like, what do you use? I'm like, I use Microsoft. And they're like, why are you doing that? Because I get email collaboration and all this stuff with, I could do that if I wanted to. I could do that for $5 a month and get a ton out of the box for $5 a month and secure email and nobody's reading my email and nobody is using it to push ads and stuff. And it ties in great with, if I'm doing custom dev and I have a custom applications living inside of Azure, it ties in great with that in the same account and stuff and same tenants. So when they see that, they're like, oh, that is kind of interesting. Like, well, you know, when the customers have to sell it, that's not as good.
No. No.
So.
Hey, but the Stripe card looks pretty awesome. I think, you know, Stripe's pretty heavily targeted at the tech scene, right? In terms of, that's how they kind of got started, like making it really easy to take payments in your applications and things. I wouldn't be surprised if most of this is targeted at tech startups and offering them services, which is awesome. Like the company incorporation stuff, I can't remember, what was it?
Yeah.
Atlas or whatever it's called.
Atlas, yeah, that's right.
Corporation. Now they're giving you payment. They've obviously got payment processing and stuff. Now they've got credit cards to help you run your business and all of that sort of stuff. They just keep sort of adding all these great services for tech startups. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job with it.
I've got a slightly more controversial one, but it is related to Microsoft, but it is kind of political. So Brad Smith has got a new book out called Tools and Weapons, The Promise and the Peril of the Digital Age. And apparently it's pretty good. I haven't read it yet, but I will definitely like to add it to my reading list. But amongst other tidbits, it's got all sorts of interesting things. Like he talks about Brad Smith, who's the lead counsel for Microsoft, or the head of all the legal and corporate affairs at Microsoft. He weighs in on Huawei and the export ban list, talks about Taylor Swift threatening to sue Microsoft over their bigoted Twitter bot. Remember Tay?
Oh, yes.
That went fully Hitler in like 15 minutes or something. There were some other absolute classic ones in here. But the one that seems to be making the headline, which in Windows Central, is that some Trump advisor asked Microsoft why it wouldn't help them spy on people. And he was like, yeah, we're not going to do that. He's so politically correct, yet so savage all at the same time.
Yeah.
Because he's an extremely smart cookie, right? And we've talked about him on the show before and how impressed we've been with some of his keynotes and commentary on various topics and all that sort of stuff. And he's just so level-headed and so pragmatic about these things, at least from the outside. I've never worked with him, yeah, personally, but yeah. Fascinating. But yeah, it talks about regulations and laws and how he's had disagreements with both the Trump administration, but also the Obama administration, from everything from privacy to facial recognition. Yeah, just it sounds like a fascinating look inside some of that side of Microsoft that we don't really get to see or hear much about, but he's trying to sort of open it up a little bit.
This is interesting. I didn't know about this until you put this in the show notes here. This would be interesting to get. I'm trying to see real quick while you're going through this if it's got if it's on Audible yet.
Yeah, yeah. I just love how he says, GeekWire recounts the passage from the new book in which an unnamed Trump advisor asks Smith why Microsoft would not help the U.S. government spy on people in other countries. Smith clarified to the advisor that Microsoft was not open to discussing the issue. How clear is that? It's just like, yeah.
Awesome.
Nah.
It is on Audible. It is on Audible. I just grabbed it.
Oh, awesome. I will definitely be listening to that one.
Very cool. That's a good find, man. It's almost like a pick.
It looks pretty promising. Oh, I've got a better pick. Anyway,
oh, okay.
That's for later on.
All right. Sounds good. But hey, we got a little bit of news we're going to do, very little bit. But then we want to dive into a discussion on, we're going to dive into a discussion. So let's take a quick break and listen from one of our awesome sponsors that make this show possible. And we'll be right back.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, CJ, we have we just got 3 bits of news here that we're going to cover. One of them is kind of industry thing, and I don't know, I don't know if it really makes sense to say it belongs on the cloud show, but I found it as an interesting read. And then we got a couple other ones from Microsoft. So there's an article on Krebs on Security. So if you're familiar with this site, this guy does a really good job of unpacking like zero-day exploits and hacker news and stuff like that. And he has a post out from, I believe, this past week, early in September, that the title of it is A New York Payroll Company Vanishes with $35 Million. And what it seems to be, the FBI is now involved, and what seems to have happened is the CEO, which I don't know if I should say that just yet, because I mean, the CEO's disappeared, but it looks like he's voluntarily disappeared. It doesn't look like he's been grabbed. It appears that
he's voluntarily disappearing himself.
Yeah. Because I'll explain why, but we got to let the FBI kind of figure this stuff out. But so it was a payroll company. So let's say that I'm a payroll company and I'm an employer and I have a bunch of people that are employees of mine, or like you, Hyperfish. And to pay them, what you end up doing is every 2 weeks when people get paid, you send a very specially crafted data file to a payroll company, and that payroll company looks at that data file And those people have granted the payroll company access to their accounts, to where the payroll company then takes the sum of all the money that's supposed to be in payroll, pulls it out of your account, puts it in a holding account, and then distributes that to all the different employees the correct amount, does the correct withholdings and all that kind of stuff as well. And then you pay them a fee for doing that for you. Yeah. So what appears to have happened with this is that instead of the money going to the normal holding account, it went to a different holding account out of the blue for the first time in 12 years. And it was $26 million, right? Then there was that money when one of the companies realized that that's what happened. So it's actually a chain. It's a payroll company that actually has a parent company that's another payroll company that was doing it for them. So other people were doing, reselling services. And when one of the child companies or one of the customers of this noticed that it happened and they asked them, why did you do this? And they said, oh, we don't have access to our other account. We have access to this account. And they were like, doesn't sound right. And so they issued a rejection or unwinded, an undo, whatever you want to call it. And when they issued that undo, it was supposed to stop to not do that anymore. But then it was supposed to go put the money back in the employer's account. Then they issued, there was another confusion where another one of those returns was supposed to go through. One of them was improperly formatted. It's supposed to never be processed unless it's correctly formatted. But yeah, some companies respected the flawed one. But the problem was, is they respected both of them. So they pulled the money out twice. And some of them actually did the inverse and pulled the money out of some of the employees' accounts. So it pulled two paychecks, or the value of two paychecks out of some employees' accounts. They lost a month's worth of wages when they were supposed to be getting money. So you're getting the inverse of three checks. You're expecting one check and the value of two checks disappears from your account. There's some other confusion stuff that went on to this, and effectively now is up to about $35 million. And one of the child companies, the CEO of one of the child companies, was able to reach the CEO of the company in question at 8 o'clock on September the 4th and at night. And he said, yep, we're looking into it. I'll get back to you. Let me call you back in a few minutes. And he hasn't been heard from since. He's disappeared. And all the employees of that company said, we haven't seen the CEO now in a week. So now the FBI's gotten involved and it looks, and it gets better. And then out of the blue, the company that is subject to all this stuff sent an email to all of their customers and said, hey, we've ceased operations. We're not going to make payroll. You should make new plans. Because it sounds like they've realized, oh crap, we have taken $35 million from people. Somebody emptied it out of our holding account. We can't make payroll for you guys. So we are now have a liability of $35 million that we can't cover. And we don't want this to get any worse. So we're just going to have to shut down business. And people are all like, what the hell?
Good grief. I don't know what this guy thinks he's going to get away with.
$35
million. I don't think he's going to get away with it.
I wouldn't think so. But I mean, you got $35 million. You can get a new identity and go live on an island somewhere.
Yeah, I'd say that's going to be pretty tough.
I would think so too.
Fill a suitcase full of money and leave? That's surprisingly difficult. I've tried.
Didn't go so well?
Yeah. I got the bank teller was like, you want how many million in $20 notes? That sucks.
Yeah. We got another bit of news. I'm going to let you do this one, though.
This is an interesting one. Wunderlist, which was a company that Microsoft bought quite a few years back now, while I was still at Microsoft, so more than 4 years ago. 7 years? 4 years? No, I can't remember. Quite a while. The Wunderlist founder, this guy Christian Reber, who's subsequently left Microsoft, offers to buy back the application from Microsoft. So on Twitter, he sent a note saying, still sad Microsoft wants to shut down Wunderlist, even though people still use and love it. I'm serious, Satya Nadella and Marcus Ash. I think he's the GM that works on To-Do. Please let me buy it back. Keep the team and focus on Microsoft To-Do, and no one will be angry for not shutting down Wunderlist. So he's trying to pitch that he should go get Wunderlist back. Because what Microsoft's trying to do is, they've got the Microsoft To-Do application and they're trying to get people to use that instead of Wunderlist and move people across. And so they've got a nice migration and things like that. And it's actually pretty straightforward to move across. But there's obviously lots of people that aren't doing that, and for good reason. And Microsoft have not said, here's a date we're going to shut down Wunderlist. Mm-hmm. They've just said, we urge you to move over to Microsoft To-Do. I'm a Wunderlist user, and I'm like, quite frankly, you're going to need to beep this. That, right? Why break something? Sorry, yeah. What is it? Why fix something that's not broken?
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy on Wunderlist, and it sounds like there are many others in the same boat as me.
Yeah, there really are. You're not alone. There's a lot of people who are irritated by it. I've not been happy with this move.
So Microsoft, Sacha, I know you're a frequent listener of the show. I ask you, along with Christian, to sell him the damn app, please. That'd be sweet.
So I wonder, well, I shouldn't say I wonder because it's kind of obvious, but it'd be curious how many people were like, yep, I'm out. See ya. I'm going back to Wunderlist. I'm leaving you, Microsoft, after you bought the thing. That'd be kind of interesting to see, you know.
You think that they'd go back from To-Do to Wunderlist?
No. I mean, if you buy Wunderlist, because he said he would keep the users, right? He said you can keep the team, not the users.
He said you can keep the team, but don't. He said keep the team and focus on Microsoft To-Do. And no one will be angry for not shutting down Wunderlist.
Yeah. I wonder how much he's offering to buy it for, because I think there's rumored he paid between 100 and 200 million for it, or Microsoft paid him between 100 and 200 million. Yeah. And then I'm also, all right, so Randy McRantface is coming on again. Here's the thing that I don't get. It's, okay, you get to bleep one, I get to bleep one. It's a fucking To-Do app.
Yeah.
And it has been 4 years and Microsoft still isn't at feature parity and the app works great. I still create tasks that I plan on having a due date of later today or tomorrow. And every time I create them, they show up as it's due yesterday. Like, what the f***? Right? And then I have another one. I have a repeating task. I use To-Do. I have an app, a list in there for like maintenance on my aquarium. And so I have one that is clean the left canister, clean the right canister. And I do that once every 2 weeks. And so it's a repeat this weekly every 2 weeks. And sometimes when I go through and I say, yes, I've done it on Saturday, I go back and look and it says, you have 100 to-dos. And I'm like, what have I 100 to-dos? And I go look at it and it's created 100 instances of that recurring task, which is only supposed to create a new one every time I complete the last one. But it creates 100 of them and they're all due in 25 years. How does that get through testing?
Clutching defeat from the jaws of victory. This God, is every brain moment.
People don't build. Today, a brand new app isn't a Hello World app. It's a fucking To-Do app. How is it that they still... This is what the intern does. How in the hell is it 4 years and it still isn't done?
Yeah, exactly. There are only three problems in computer science. One is identity, the next one's recursion, and the third is to-dos.
I know it drives me up. A buddy of ours said something like, I suspect that this is where they're going to go and they're bringing together the entire picture. I'm like, with all due respect, it's been 4 years. The track record, there's absolutely no reason why I should buy into that statement.
Well, the sad part about all this is it's the same team that built Wunderlist that are building To-Do. And so you'd think they'd be able to get it right.
But what about the PM? I'm sure there's a PM that owns the whole thing. There was a Microsoft guy that just...
Yeah, no, exactly.
He's known as Mr. Incompetent right
Microsoft,
now.
Microsoft, I am not moving off Wunderlist until you give me a date to move off Wunderlist. And then I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to move to your To-Do application out of spite for you bring over Wunderlist. How about that?
Here's what I told somebody. I was like... I tell you what, if the person that owns to-dos or tasks at Microsoft came to me and said, hey, I'm the PM that owns this stuff, I'd be like, dude, I wouldn't hire you to wash my car right now. I mean, and whoever that is, I'm sorry that I'm saying that,
you should hire them to wash your car because they're going to repeat it 100 times.
But the wheels are still going to be dirty. There's still going to be something wrong with it.
You'll be driving down the road and be like, bing, I'm done. What? No, wait. Oh, no, there's 100 more of me. Oh, it's comical, isn't it? Microsoft's goal is noble. It's noble.
It is.
They want to create the one app for tasks at Microsoft and get everybody integrating and do all of that. But it's been 4 years.
Yeah,
basic task app done in 4 years. Just call it quits and go home. Like, don't bother.
Okay, so I got another one. So there's a new podcast. It's by the OneDrive team. It's called Sync Up. At the time.
Surely it should be Won't Sync Up. I'm sorry, Omar, if you're listening.
That might have been
accurate, but maybe not today.
Not today. I've switched almost everything from Google Drive over to OneDrive. I've been pretty happy. I've been very happy, actually, with OneDrive on desktop, on my Mac, on my phone, on my iPad. I've been very happy with it. I even uninstalled my Dropbox client the other day. Actually, yesterday, I uninstalled my Dropbox client.
Your OneDrive folder inside your Dropbox folder?
For backup, no.
Gotcha.
It's like sync inception. I don't want to do that. So anyway, this new podcast up. And as of the time of we're recording, so on September the 12th, they show only having one episode, but really it looks like there's two. The first one is there's a trailer.
Oh, it's short?
And it's 2 minutes and 13 seconds. And then there's an episode, which is files, files, files. So if you are a OneDrive person, and if you are interested in a podcast that talks about OneDrive, hey, here's a show for you. And I see that it looks like from the name, the Twitter handles, I haven't listened to the first episode, but it looks like the people who are responsible for it are like the main people that own OneDrive, Jason Moore and Akita Kriti. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I'm going to say about this, I will be a little cynical here. I mean, because that's kind of what we are, and this seems like a theme right now. The only thing I'm going to be cynical about this is that I hope this is not going to be another Microsoft community thing that when the people who are doing the podcast start doing a new job, that because everybody gets reorged at Microsoft every 6 to 12 months, it seems, then nobody picks this up and it just kind of dies on the vine. And you just see that. I see that so much with community-based initiatives from Microsoft that I don't buy into some of those things anymore, because it's a community-based initiative that somebody has started, usually to check off a box for a metric on their scorecard when review time comes around. And when they go to something else, it's no longer on their scorecard, so they don't care about it because it's not really a passion. And so maybe that's not fair for these individuals, but that's what I see a lot. And so I'd be curious to see how long this lasts. We saw that with like the SharePoint dev show, the Office 365 dev show. It went away, then it came back, and then it went away, and it came back. And it all kind of revolves on people on certain teams. So
yeah, okay. Well, I will listen to it, and we'll see what goes down.
Okay. So before we move on to the next topic at hand, let's take a listen from a pair of our awesome sponsors, and we will come right back. For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know that they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking, how about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl? That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 groups governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it for free for 30 days at ShareGate.com/collegeshow. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. Okay, CJ, today we weren't going to do this initially. And based on the reaction, we thought, what the hell, it'd be kind of interesting. And I didn't mean for this show to kind of start out on being very cynical and all the stuff we were talking about with Wunderlist and the OneDrive podcast and stuff. But I really do see this as a positive. I saw this as a positive thing. So I've been wanting to write this blog post for a long time. I've had it written for a long time. I've actually got a few things that I've removed from it because I don't feel like it's, I feel some things I think are a little too, this is all my opinion about what I feel is on my wish list for the SharePoint framework. And I call it summer 2019. I know we're, you know, deep into September right now. But quite frankly, this stuff's been on my list and hasn't come off my list for 6 months. So this could be called my spring 2019 list too. And I put this post up on September the 4th, so last Wednesday. And I've been surprised, but I've gotten a lot of traffic from it on my blog. I've seen a lot of, I've tweeted out a couple times about it. And every time I tweet about it, I get around 2,500 clicks on each one of the tweets. And so there's a lot of interest around it. People have voiced what their is on their wish list and they put it on Twitter as well. And I also understand that there's been, you know, there was a, it kind of floated around internally on a thread with the SharePoint team at Microsoft as well. So I asked you if you'd be interested in chatting about it a bit on the show. I thought that it'd be a good opportunity just to kind of add some color to it, but we'll have a link to it in the show notes and figure we can kind of go through some of this stuff. I do.
Yeah, I read your post and so I guess my initial impressions were like, obviously I don't do as much with SPFX that you do. And so some of these things are more detailed than I'm aware of, but on the whole, there's certainly things that, you know, when we go to shows and we talk to different people about building stuff for SharePoint and building things in general, there's some pretty common themes that have come up, right? And some of these touch in those. But as we go through them, we'll call them out.
I do want to preface this because I don't want people to hear this and think and come away with the wrong impression, okay? So I want to share first like what my thought is on the SharePoint framework very briefly, and then what my general feel is on the current state of the SharePoint framework. I promise it's only going to take about 2 minutes. And because I don't want people to walk away from this thinking that I'm complaining and that I don't like it and stuff like that. Everything that I have listed here is, I think it's all stuff to make things better. And it's not me complaining or about the team. I think the team has done a great job for shipping stuff as often as they have and being as engaging and open as they have been with the community. I've been very impressed with this group. The SharePoint group is doing a very good job of this, better than many, many other groups. So I definitely don't want to throw them under the bus. So I'm without a doubt, I'm a huge fan of the SharePoint framework. I think it is the direction that Microsoft needed to go in for extensibility with SharePoint. I love the client-side approach to it. I know a lot of people who were server-side people absolutely loved it, and they don't like to go on the client-side. But if you're in a hosted environment like this, this is the best option because you can't have your code running in their servers without potentially being a noisy neighbor. And this is a great approach to do it. So I'm a huge fan of it. I'm also a big fan of the modern tool chain, the modern web tool chain, they call it, that we see outside of the SharePoint framework as well. We see the React people doing it, the Angular people doing it, the Node people doing it. We see all these people doing it. I think it's good because I love the fact that the SharePoint framework is helping SharePoint developers learn skills that are immediately transferable outside of even the Microsoft world, but specifically out of the SharePoint world. So understanding things like modules and how Webpack works and module loaders and Gulp, all of these things, these are good things because this is how all of the web is getting developed these days.
I remember even back in WSS 3 days, right, when I worked on the SharePoint engineering team for a while, one of the goals was to stop being weird. Mm-hmm. And I mean, admittedly, it took a really, 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 really long time. But we already knew back at the time that being a SharePoint developer was weird. It was like not how other development worked, right? And mm-hmm. And that was a real problem because it meant that it was really hard to get SharePoint developers or people to develop for SharePoint. And it was really hard to drag new developers into the ecosystem too because they looked at SharePoint as like this black magic voodoo wizardry that they didn't understand. And so, you know, even back then it was a problem. And it's great. I completely agree with you that like not being so weird will really, really help SharePoint. If I can convince a React developer to go build something that's going to land in SharePoint now and they don't sort of curl their toes up and run for the hills, that's a win. That's incredible because it's never been like that before.
Right. And it's a win on both sides. It's a win for Microsoft because they can get some of these people who are not traditional SharePoint developers, they can get them productive in building stuff. But it's also a win for you, the developer, because you learn these skills that you're going to be able to use in other places as well. And so that's what I think that's the big thing. Now, now that I've said that, let me throw out kind of the theme of this post. It's time for some maturity. SharePoint Framework has been out since early 2017. September's now. Every 2 weeks, Microsoft has a community call with the Patterns and Practices group, and they show a chart showing SharePoint Framework adoption. There are no numbers on that chart. They can't share that, but it's a 45 degree going up. It is constantly growing. Every single month, they break their records for the number of things that are being deployed and used, specifically in SharePoint Online, where they can really measure. They can't do any of this stuff. They can't measure what's going on-prem, but they can go through and look at all this stuff. So we see people are using it. People are building stuff, and the growth is awesome. And honestly, if you saw the growth for some of the other frameworks that Microsoft has and has had in the past, you'd be surprised. And especially like what you're being told that you should be building stuff, you'd be surprised when you compare it to SharePoint Framework.
Like the growth is obviously a very key thing, right? Because it means that people feel more confident that it's going to stick around. People feel more confident that it's able to deliver production. They're able to deliver production solutions with it, things like that, right? It's good evidence to show. It'd be nice to know the actual numbers, of course, but I can also see why they don't give them out.
I won't say anything. So they're impressive. I'll just leave it at that. They're very impressive.
Yeah. But it does I've seen some of the numbers too, and if it was publicly released, it does tip the hat to sort of reverse engineer the usage of SharePoint Online. And they don't want to tip their hat to competitors about what that is.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
It's going in the right direction. It's growing and it's a lot of usage.
Very much so. Okay, so first topic. Addressing long open and known / recognized issues. So here's the thing. SharePoint Framework, when this came out...
You're saying there are bugs?
Yes, I am. In everything, right? I mean, stuff I've written, I'm sure Hyperfish has got some known stuff that you guys... It's like on the backlog. Like, is it important we fix now? Maybe not. Maybe there's hot button things you're working on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's got something.
Right, yeah.
So the SharePoint Framework... When this came out, they created a repository in GitHub. So if you go to github.com/SharePoint/sp-dev-docs, or you can get to it if you just go to aka.ms/sp-dev-docs. Sorry, dev-issues. And this is a place, it's supposed to be for anything dev SharePoint related. If you got a question, you got a bug, you got an issue, this is where you post it, right? And it's very active, very, very active. In fact, since this list was created in August of 2016, or at least when it was made, the first issue was created was in August of 2016, we've closed over 2,700 issues, which is over 2.4 issues per day. And I think that's impressive. And most of it is done by the community as well. So a lot of engineering is on there as well. But here's the thing. So keep in mind that this is a mix of all SharePoint development stuff, but the SharePoint Framework does dominate the majority of this list. At the time that I wrote this post, there were 282 open issues that were tagged as tracked and 163 that were tagged as bug confirmed. Now, let me explain what that means. Bug confirmed, that's obvious, right? Yep. So that is 163 issues that Microsoft has recognized this is broken and it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Some of those are dupes, and we're trying to figure out the ones that are dupes so we can consolidate things down to just one primary issue. So you don't have 50 people saying that this thing isn't working and you have 50 issues showing that. It shouldn't be like that. The other thing that they do is when you see an issue that has a status tracked, that's the label that's on it. So there's 282 of those. What that means is that internally, Microsoft is using Azure DevOps for the SharePoint engineering team. And when there's an issue in GitHub that shows it's being tracked, that means that they've created an issue in their DevOps that mirrors that issue in GitHub. The public thing that we can see, it's internal to where they can say, we're going to assign it to this sprint. We're going to have this developer work on it. This is where they're in the research, whatever it is. So it shows that they have recognized here are this many issues that we're working on. The thing that's a little, And the thing that my ask to Microsoft on this is that, look, some of these things have been open for over a year. So let's go through this and let's figure it out. Let's say we're not going to fix it. There's some bugs that are known that are out there that Microsoft is just going to say, we're not going to fix it. This is not important and low hanging fruit. Let's, Marcus, don't fix it and let's close it. Or let's fix it. Or let's triage it and figure out what's going on. There are some in there that are so simple. There's one that I've had in there that's been there for over a year. And there's a spot where the tooltip tells you the link to go look for all the Office UI Fabric icons. And it points to a URL that no longer exists. It goes to a 404. That isn't going to break any unit test out there. So why can't we just fix that in one of these releases? That's like an awesome job for a summer intern. We just passed through summer. It's like, oh man, this is what your intern should have done. And it's, you could have fixed that.
Yeah. It's almost like that's so basic that people go, oh yeah, we could do that anytime. Let's work on some harder things.
Yeah. There are some things at the end of the post, I say, it would be nice if you guys would open source the generator, because then in some of these things that are out there, we could go in and we could submit PRs. And I understand that you don't want to get overloaded with stuff. And I understand you're working on, maybe you're working on some new features you're going to announce at Ignite, and that code is in there and other people can't see it. And I understand, I get it. But I do think that there is a certain degree of things that we can contribute and we can help on, that we can provide, that I bet you the community would jump in and do it. Bet you that would happen.
Totally.
Second one is, I call it modernizing the SharePoint framework project. Not the SharePoint framework, but the project itself. So there are three things here. And again, all of these things are low-hanging fruit. The first one, the README file that we get in every single project is, it looks like it was done as the very first thing for the SharePoint framework back 3 years ago, and no one's touched it since. And they weren't finished with it either. Yeah. Get this. If you create a brand new SharePoint framework project, you can today have three different types of components: a web part, an extension, or a library component. But the README says this is the project for your web part component.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah, it's just some of the basics.
They have a list at the bottom of, here's all of the gulp tasks: gulp build, gulp clean, gulp bundle, gulp package solution. You know what the description is right next to them?
To do.
To do.
Oh, no way.
It just says to do.
Oh, that was a surprise. I actually didn't know.
Yeah, so the to do team is not working on that either. Sorry. So there's that one. So that's something.
Tidy up required. Yeah.
Yeah, just some cleaning stuff. So you know what? I'm not going to be part of the problem. I hate people that are part of the problem and not part of the solution. So I bugged it. I put it in the issue list. I created a link and said, go to this gist. This is what I think the README should have in it. Want to do something about it? Do it.
Can you do PRs?
Nope. Can't do PRs against the generator because it's not open source. This is my ask. That's my ask. Here's another one. Now, this one is a little complicated. I don't think it's that big of a deal. So when in the SharePoint framework, we use a Node.js project type, but we don't deploy a Node.js project. We don't really use it as a Node.js project. We simply use it as a way to run Gulp to generate some artifacts that we're going to deploy to SharePoint, right? Our output is not
Node code.
Right, it's not Node code. It is a JavaScript file, a JSON file, a crap ton of XML packaged up in a zip. That's what output is. So inside of a Node project, we have a file called package.json, and that contains a bunch of stuff, but there's two sections in there, one called dependencies and one called dev dependencies. Dependencies is stuff that the project needs to run in order to run in production. So if it was going to be a Node.js web server, it would have Express, or it would have the Passport, which is used for authentication, or it would have React if it was a React app. The dev dependencies section is stuff that you need in order to develop it. So you'd have things like TypeScript and Gulp and testing tools and stuff like that. In the SharePoint framework, what I'm about to suggest doesn't really matter, because both of these are really only the dependency section should be removed and everything should be moved in dev dependencies, because you're not going to deploy this project. So there is no real dependencies. It's always dev dependencies. But my pitch to them, and has been, and they agree, because I created an issue over a year ago, and they said, yep, we agree, we'll put it on the backlog. But I mean, I don't know how far the backlog is, but apparently it's very long. My ask was, why don't we at least use these two things, dependencies and dev dependencies, as a way of documentation and communicating to someone else, here's what this project needs to run in production, here's what you need for development. So for example, we've got two or three TypeScript type declaration libraries. And if you're doing React, you've got another set of them that are in the dependencies section. They shouldn't be there. They should be done in dev dependencies. You never need TypeScript type declarations in production. You need it only in development. So move those guys down.
It's almost like probably what's happened is when they started this project, apologies in advance, but because these people are really nice people, but they probably didn't understand Node at the time and the way Node projects are structured and some of these concepts, right? And then it's just never been tidied up since.
Yeah, that is my perception.
And all it would take, actually, so across all of your issues in this blog post, the majority of them, except the modernizing SharePoint part, all of them around the SPFX packages and project stuff, it would take one person for a summer to fix.
I would argue that you could get this stuff. I would argue that the things that I suggest here, you could fix all this stuff before you had lunch. If you sat down at the first thing you did that morning, you get it done before you had lunch.
Sure, all the code changes and stuff you could do. But I mean, in terms of like getting it done in Microsoft, there's more to it than just making the code changes, right?
I agree.
There's any testing stuff that's got to be done. There's all the release management stuff that's got to be done. There's a bunch of other dev dependencies that we don't necessarily have to participate in. But actually making the code changes and stuff, yeah, for somebody who knew what they were doing, they could knock it out in the morning.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with you. All right, here's another one. And this kind of goes in the same bucket. I got three things on this one. So this goes back to package.json. We got some stuff that should just be cleaned out. I mean, we have references to type declarations for Chai and Mocha. Those are two testing tools that you don't, right now, I mean, why include testing tools in a SharePoint framework project when you don't include the test runners or anything like that? And someone could say, oh yeah, well, they're really there. We use them under the covers. Like going, well, then why aren't the type declarations there under the covers? I say, oh, well, they are. Well, then why are they here?
Yeah.
So don't give me stuff that I might use and I might need. Give me stuff that I need and let me go add the other stuff that I would want to do. Like if I'm using Jest for testing. So get rid of those. Another one.
It's almost like somebody added the package just as part of their thing, and then they just did a big bulk check-in at some point really early on and forgot to remove them.
Well, this one we actually had at the very beginning of the SharePoint framework, we actually had some sample tests that were in the project, and those were ultimately removed because no one was using them. And they were actually breaking some of the builds. So, I mean, to me, it's like, if you're going to remove those, then why didn't you remove this?
Hell yeah, it's always best to remove the tests that don't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it fixes the problem. It doesn't call.
Breaking the build, get rid of the tests.
Yeah, build works. So another one, in every package.json, there's a main property. And that main property is used to say, what is the entry point for the project? This has zero relevance in the SharePoint framework. Get rid of it. It's just clutter. Another thing, there's a property called engines. And that's the whole thing with engines is designed so that if you run this project with Node, it's going to make sure that you're using a version of Node that the project supports. But we don't run this project with Node. And so this thing is never looked at. If we did, then we could even update that. But here's the thing. I say get rid of it. It doesn't need to be there. But if you're not even going to get rid of it, at least make it accurate. Right now it says you need a version of Node that is greater than 0.10. No. It has to be 10.0, not 0.10.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I said, if I was at the wheel of the generator, here's what you get if I had control. So I even have a gist that even shows what I think it should be.
The generator, not open source.
Can't answer that. I don't have an answer for you. I mean, they have an answer, but...
What's their answer?
There's some legal stuff that they have to deal with, but you can get through that. The bigger challenge I think that they have is that this is not them saying this. This is me saying it. When they have some updates that they want to roll out, like I mentioned earlier, let's say they're going to do some new stuff that's coming in the next version of the SharePoint framework. How do you reconcile that, the changes that I'm submitting in a PR? How do you reconcile my PR when they do a new update that ships out? My response to them when they say that is, well, if my PR no longer builds and it breaks because you guys shipped an update, then it's my responsibility to rebase my stuff and to update my stuff to work with the latest version of the generator.
Right.
And if they take PRs in, then that means that they're now going to be responsible for supporting my code. So it's some procedure. I see you scowling. I'm just saying, I agree. And I think that there's a level of, they could have terms of service. Like if you're going to submit some stuff, don't put new features and stuff in this. If you want to help fix things, that's fine. But we're not going to support your code. And these things here that I'm suggesting, it doesn't break the generator. Because I've even gone in and I've installed the generator. And then I go in and I modify some of the things that they put in there. And the generator just to get the project to be what I want it to be when I create new things. it works just fine.
Yeah. So basically the main issue is they don't want to support other people's code. And that's sort of like old mindset, right? That's like, that would be like if you took some code and stuffed it into the, and you stuffed it into SharePoint and you had to support it. But if you open source the project, then it's the community's responsibility to support the project, not yours.
Yeah, it's,
and you
I agree.
In that, right? As a part of it. And but there are other people that will help to make sure it works and fix bugs and do all that sort of stuff.
So the thing to me when they have this argument where they say, yeah, but it's really hard. And I'm like, that's funny because the .NET core team is doing it and they're doing it just fine.
Exactly.
They have a lot of people, a lot of performance stuff has been fixed by the community and have been improved by the community. So
yeah, they can right. have they can have ultimate control over accepting PRs if you really want. Like, you know, it's there's ways to gate quality and what goes in. You can have a bunch of rules about what needs to be done, all that sort of stuff. And anyway.
I concur.
And it would also help adding new features and getting better support on things and all sorts of stuff. Anyway.
Agreed. Okay, so I could go on and on with this. I've got a bunch more stuff, but I'm gonna jump ahead to the two big ones. One of them I'm gonna go through kind of quick. There's not a whole lot to say here, but man, gee me Christmas, you guys have got to finish Modern. We've been on this new Modern UI that they've been going to fix for over 3 years. I mean, I think longer. I thought it was more like 5, but I can only go back and find where it's been mentioned back 3 years. So maybe I was wrong, but there are so many. And every time I bring this up with them, they're like, so what's not working? I'm like, oh, the part where I go to do something and it says, I need to return to Classic to go do what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So like, for example, first of all, the fact that we have a link in the bottom left corner of many SharePoint pages that says return to Classic SharePoint is exactly the problem. But the app catalogs, you can't do much with them in Modern. You got to always switch to Classic to get stuff done, like deploy stuff. That's ridiculous. Yeah. If you install an app and you want to remove it, and you're in Modern, if you're in site contents and you click the little ellipsis next to it, bring up the context menu and choose remove, what do you get? It says, this action isn't supported in this view. We are working to add that functionality. No, they're not, because if they were, it'd be done by now. But in the meantime, please go to Classic SharePoint to complete this task. And I'm like, okay, so let me switch over to Classic SharePoint. Let me click on their little ellipsis. And now I get about menu. I'm like, oh, where does that about menu come from? I don't get that in Modern. And I go to that, and then I see it's a way for me to upgrade the app. I'm like, oh, so if I was in Classic, I could upgrade to a new version, but I couldn't do that if I was in Modern. This is, it's just, it's so stupid this is taking this long. And I've seen people recommend stuff. What I would love to see is them take a stand in SharePoint Online and just say, no new site collections in Classic, and you can't switch stuff over to Classic. Done. I would love for them to take that hard line, but they won't because they'll cave.
Yep, that's a tough one. There's too much missing.
The last thing is probably one of my more controversial ones, and this is the one that I spent the most time on writing, but my biggest ask to the SharePoint framework team is to stop building new stuff. Stop building new things.
And fix what you've already got.
Yep. Finish it. Too many things we've got are MVP style features, minimum viable product. They never went back and finished them. Extensions shipped when it shipped in 2016 or midway through 2016 or midway through 2017, whichever 2017. When they shipped midway through 2017, they said for field customizers that we get them in the read-only view. And they said, we're going to be having in the summer, we'll have an update that lets you do it on a new and edit form. Nope. 2 years later, 2.5 years later, still nothing. So that kind of stuff, you've got to finish the stuff that you've been working on and stop adding all this new stuff. You've got to harden the releases. Every release now that we see, every big release. So what we would normally call a major release, they're point releases, so like 1.5, 1.7, 1.8, 1.9. Every time they do a release for the last 4 releases, I think, there has been something, a pretty big regression that has required a point release to come out very soon after. And in some cases, 2 point releases to come out very soon after. And it's just, it's so bad to the point now where I recommend to people, and I don't like doing this, but I mean, if history wasn't true, yeah, it's like, wait 2 weeks. Wait 2 weeks when a new release comes out and watch the issue list. And if you see too much show up, then wait. But if nobody else is having problems, then you're probably safe to go ahead.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
Yeah. No, I get it. And this boils down to, like, nobody at Microsoft will admit this is the case anymore, but you don't get rewarded for doing the boring stuff. Mm-hmm. You get rewarded for shipping the new shiny stuff, right? And until that mentality or that remuneration structure or that changes, it's going to be hard for people to want to do this, right? Because people are very coin operated. And if you get a bad review because you fixed a bunch of bugs as opposed to shipping new features, we're going to be stuck with this for a long time.
Yeah. So
fair enough.
That's my list.
I think those are all very reasonable, AC. There's nothing there that should be a surprise to anybody at Microsoft. And I don't think it's that harsh at all. I think it's all very reasonable stuff. It's what we expect out of a mature or a maturing platform. I hope they go through your list and tickety tick, tick, tick.
You know what I would like? I get that if they didn't want to go open with everybody, but if they picked up the phone and they called and they said, so these big hot button things, we'll give you access to the source code for a day. Would you go ahead and fix some of these things and clean some of the stuff up the way it should be? I'm like, absolutely. I'll do it. I'll submit a PR and then delete my access and just take a look at it. I would do that. I'd do that no problem. Because I really don't think it's that much stuff. And I think that somebody could knock out the majority of this stuff in a couple hours without there being any like dependencies or anything that would break, any tests or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. But AC, I hope that happens.
I don't think it will.
Should we move on to some picks?
We should. I've been going for too long.
Let's do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from business and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, CJ, you want to go first?
Yeah. So for those old timers amongst us, you'll probably remember this thing called the Windows Power Toys.
Yeah.
Remember those for like XP and stuff, Windows 95, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Power Toys is back, baby.
No way.
There's a new GitHub project that Microsoft's published called Power Toys. Power Toys is a set of utilities for power users to tune and streamline their Windows experience for greater productivity.
Oh, no way.
By the Windows 95 era Power Toys project, this reboot provides power users with ways to squeeze more efficiency out of Windows 10 shell and customize it for individual workflows.
That's cool.
It's pretty basic to begin with, but the interesting one is this power toy called Fancy Zones. It's a window manager that makes it really easy to create complex work Windows layouts and quickly position Windows into those layouts. Like I use a thing called Divi on Mac, mm-hmm. and on Windows actually, on my home PC, there's a Windows machine. And I use Divi to do complex Windows management because at home I've got an ultra-wide monitor, 38-inch ultra-wide, and there is so much effing real estate, it's not funny, right? And it's quite hard to manage Windows. And so you need better snapping than comes out of the box with Windows 10 to be really powerful with it. So that's what I think Fancy Zones aims to solve.
That's cool.
You can carve up your screen. The other one is the Windows Key Shortcut Guide, which is a shortcut guide appears when the user holds down the Windows key. There's also an equivalent for this. It's on Mac. It's like they're taking inspiration from it. So you can see what all the shortcuts could be, keyboard shortcuts and stuff like that. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So listen out for, I guess you can go subscribe. It's already got 8,670 stars on GitHub.
That's awesome.
Power Toys was rad back in the day.
Yeah, it was. It totally was.
What have you got for us this week?
I have a episode from Smarter Every Day, episode 223. Big shout out to my buddy Ben Stedjink for letting me know about this. He's already got a solo key, so he just handed it over. It's really cool. It's called How Did NASA Steer the Saturn V? And they took a modern day guy that was going through and standing up this brand new like rig with like 100 terabytes of data or something like that. And he took this guy who was building a brand new computer over to, it was a museum over in Houston, I think it was, or it might have been in Huntsville, one of the two, where he started looking at some of the old stuff that was done, that was used to make the Apollo 5, the Apollo guidance computer, and the Saturn guidance computer. And they explained, like, here's all the stuff they had to do. And you can see, like, they're getting in, like, looking at core memory and seeing how they did it and how the bands were, like, or situated one way versus another way, or how the coils went through, the cords went through, the cables went through them to signify a zero or one. He's like, so you really had like textile people going through and like threading this stuff. He's like, yep.
You know, I've watched this video beforehand. It's awesome. It's a great video because it's fascinating. But the one takeaway that blew my mind was learning why, right after liftoff, a lot of the rockets roll.
Yeah.
And the Saturn V's, like, it's a symmetrical round rocket. So why do they roll it, right? That was fascinating. And it's all to do with math calculations and X, Y, and Z axes and two-dimensional math versus three-dimensional math and stuff. And it's really interesting. So, you know, when they take off, you hear and like roll program and they'll like roll. The shuttle rolled because it wasn't a symmetrical rocket, right? And it needed to go heads down as it went up into orbit. But for Saturn and a lot of the other symmetrical rockets, there are still reasons why they want to roll. And it's kind of interesting.
It's very interesting. It was very interesting. I love this. This is a great post.
Yep.
Absolutely great post.
Hey, we have a listener pick this week that is absolutely hilarious. It's from James Duncan. James, thank you for sending this in. But it's called Let's Deploy to Production. and so you know there's the clips where it's in another language and then they dub over it with different subtitles, basically. And it's hilarious. You know, there's the guy with the missing teeth and the mustache and he's laughing hysterically and it's some interview on TV.
Yeah.
This one's called Let's Deploy to Production. And it's basically, it's very topical because of what you've spoken about with SPFX. Basically, like, he goes into like they've got this big data analysis system and like, but we're agile. We should just deploy straight to production. And he starts laughing his head off and he's like, agile, it's really funny. Anyway, if you're into this sort of stuff, go check out this video. It makes me laugh hysterically every time I see this guy. One, because the guy is just funny to watch. But two, because of the closed captions, right? Or the text up over it is just priceless. And we've all been in this situation. If you've ever deployed code to production, yeah. It's pretty entertaining. So, James, thank you for sending us the pick.
Awesome. Thanks, James.
The solo key.
Very cool.
Right on, AC. We've been rambling long enough, haven't we?
We have. 1 hour, 8 minutes and 43 seconds, 44 seconds now. So, yeah, I think we should wrap this one up.
All right. Well, it's been good chatting.
Yeah, man. I will talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. See ya.
Later.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.